Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Northern California. Today is Tuesday, June 5th, and it's the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 67, the third paragraph, which is the last paragraph. Notice that the word fear, through two paragraphs ending, when it made us cocky, it was worse, and the comments will be on both paragraphs. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Terry A. H., the 12 Traditions, Kathy G., and the readers of the text are Sherry K. B. and Stephanie L. The share ID for Monday, June 4th, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 11,498, and for this morning's meeting, Tuesday, May 29th, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 11,499. That's 11499. All right, let me move over here. ROA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions. And I will now ask Terry A. H. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning. My name is Terry A. H. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Maine. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Terry A. H., and I will now ask Kathy G. to read the 12 traditions.
Good morning, everyone. This is Kathy G. from Illinois, gratefully recovered compulsive overeater. The 12 traditions. The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks so much. I pass.
Thank you, Kathy G. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and the literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. Again, in order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 67, starting with the third paragraph, which is the last paragraph. Notice that the word fear through two paragraphs, ending with when it made us cocky, it was worse, and the comments will be on both paragraphs. And I will now ask Sherry KB to get us started this morning.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everybody. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered compulsive overeater. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. The short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did we not ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper even though we had no resentment in connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. I'm going to set myself on my timer. So I'm still Sherry, grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater, and thank you so much for your service. Mo and everybody on the line, and welcome newcomers. And this is powerful stuff here, because fear, it did run me. I mean, it ran every nook and cranny in my life. And when I sat down and I did my fourth step in this book this way, and I had. That paper in front of me writing down my fears. What was amazing to me is how, when I started listing them, I realized how much they ran every area of my life. And it started, when I started doing the work, it started getting unblocked. And what I recognized, and then I looked this up, and, it asked me if I was relying on finite self or infinite higher power. And finite means limited. It means restricted. And infinite means limitless. endless, never ending, impossible to measure without limits or boundaries. And so I was relying on finite self. I wasn't relying on God when I was in fear. And that was the key. That was the key to my freedom, because I realized that I was trying to run the fairy show, relying on myself. Whereas when I rely on my higher power, I'm not in fear. And when I do a fear inventory or fear turnaround today, the first thing I ask is, am I relying on finite self or am I relying on infinite higher power? And as soon as I do that, the fear dissipates. And it's amazing to me how that gets turned around. So what it's telling me is, when I'm in fear, I'm not relying on God. And so that's what changes a lot of things for me. And it makes such a difference in my life that somehow when I do that turnaround, I'm no longer in that fear, and I can walk through things hand in hand with my higher power. And that's what is so powerful about this whole thing, and the idea of doing the fourth step and getting unblocked, because I get unblocked from my fear and I get to connect with my higher power. And I can't do this without my higher power today, especially when I can get so paralyzed by my fear, because this last line just really always would get to me, is that that it, even though I thought I had all this confidence, it never solved the fear problem. I don't know about you, but it never solved my fear problem without my higher power. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry KB. And for those of you just coming on the line, we are reading, you're on page 67, starting with the third paragraph. Notice that the word fear, and we'll be reading through two paragraphs. We've read through two paragraphs, ending with, when it made us cocky, it was worse. And I will now take those who would like to share.
Virginia. Virginia.
Oh, my goodness. Could you do that one more time?
Mary Jane
R.
Z.
Mary Jane R.
Kristen R.
Kristen R.
Ginger C.
Ginger C.
Melanie C.
Bonnie C.
Melanie.
Oh, sorry, Melanie. All right. I can take a few more.
Roz G.
Roz G. A few more.
Eileen M.
Eileen M.
Patty T.
Marilyn T.
Patty T. And there was one more after Patty. Who was that?
Marilyn D.
I got Marilyn D. One more.
Deanne B.
Deanne?
Yes. I'm a newcomer.
Got it. Thank you. I got you in there. Okay, let's go with this good long lineup. Mary Jane R., Kristen R., Ginger C., Melanie C., Roz G., I think it's Eileen, I'm not sure if it's Eileen or Irene, M., Patty T., Marilyn D., and Deanne B. Mary Jane, start us off, followed by Kristen R.
Good morning, may I be heard?
Yes, you may. Yes, you are.
Hi, this is Mary Jane Z, as in zebra. Yeah,
right.
Recovered in Kentucky. Good morning.
Morning.
Oh, cocky. That's what fear did for me. Fear empowered me. I grew up fearful, and somewhere along the line, armed with some psychotherapy and a self-help book and a good religion, I was fearless. And I grew up in the Star Wars era, so I was Princess Leia with that lightsaber, going through life just zapping fear, doing everything I needed to do to take care of what needed to be taken care of. And I got in a program, another program that was going to help me fix problems in other people. And that got my attention when it told me I couldn't. And then it also brought the attention of food issues to light. And then, oh my gosh, the fear really surfaced because I didn't have my lightsaber anymore, because I learned that it wasn't helping me. And then I had to face these fears. And doing that inventory showed me my part. And I had financial fear, fear of things happening to my children. And guess what? I've heard that false evidence appearing real. But everything I feared came true. Bad things happened to my finances. Bad things happened to my children. And I still had to keep walking. And through this program, I have gotten a higher power that is and will see me through. And I put the lightsaber down, and I don't do much anymore. I trust. And I'm living with the consequences of the decisions that I've made and the decisions of people that I love that have made. And I can see God's power and God's love in my life now today. And do I do it perfectly? Heck no. You know, I've got a long time of practicing unhealthy habits. So, you know, I still fall back into unhealthy behaviors. As my husband always reminds me, you never played a team sport, did you? It's like, no, I've never played on a team. But now I'm learning to be part of a fellowship, and I'm learning to be listen and ask God for guidance. And boy, is it sure is a lot easier to live my life today. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Mary Jane Z. Kristen R., followed by Ginger C.
Thank you. Thank you for your service this morning. My name is Kristen R. I'm a compulsive overeater in Virginia. And this part of the big book has had my attention for a long time. And primarily because fear is my adrenaline. Fear drives me. I was raised in fear. I have parents in fear. I got married in fear. And a lot of times, you know, it seemed like the perfectly natural thing to do. You know, if you're humble, you're in fear, right? No, not necessarily. True humility recognizes that there's a power greater than I am. I always thought I was the greatest power. I've always said, I've believed in God, but God was like a little icon that I had on a shelf that I would take down and look at sometimes and feel sentimental about. God wasn't the whole picture. And, you know, just yesterday, I realized, you know, after talking to another fellow, doing yet another 10-step, another fear on my kids, that I haven't been believing that God is big enough to handle my little life, you know, especially because I have a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old, and no one knows my babies better than me, right? There's just, and I should be the one to be able to control them and manage them. And, you know, that's my cockiness. That's my arrogance and And I never saw it. Is God big enough to help me with these fears? Absolutely. How do I come to believe that? I have to continue to work step 11 like my hair is on fire every moment and every day. And you know, the harder I work it, sometimes the louder those voices get. What are you doing? Why are you wasting your time on this? You should be doing something else. You should be. And that is like me on a mountaintop facing my fears, where I'm saying, no, you're not going to win because my higher power is in charge and I'm loved and I'm cared for in a way that I never knew before. And when I start to look for my higher power in ways that I haven't normally looked before, in other people, in program, in the steps, thank God for the steps, then my fear starts to go away. You know, there is something bigger than me, and that thing can handle all of my fear. And today I'm in full, you know, I'm completely in uncertainty. I'm in disorientation. I'm not sure what the next thing is. And you know what? It's the same as every other day of my life. The only difference is that I'm not living in the delusion that I can somehow control everything and everyone around me, that I can control my food by myself, that I can control everybody by myself.
time.
I'll just finish up with what I am living in is that my higher power is my guide and my pilot, and as long as I stay in my passenger seat, I'll be fine. Thanks for letting me share.
And thank you, Kristen R. Ginger C., followed by Melanie C.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you so much for your continued service. This is Ginger C., recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado, and wow, this fear, this evil and corroding thread, and I feel like I was born with fear, came out into the world with this nervous disposition, and, you know, my whole childhood was just worry after worry after worry. And in hindsight, you know, I think it actually served a purpose because I was in such a painful existence in my home life. And that worry was like a false sense of control to try to help and protect me. But as I grow up, you know, I've already survived this childhood of mine. And this fear today, these worries, they no longer serve me. They keep me a prisoner. They keep me out of life. And I'll promise you, they kept me eating. Because to live in that state of mind and body is painful, a very painful existence. And it's all I knew was just constant worry. When was the left shoe going to drop? And I'll never forget when I got in after Virginia Beach and I started this process with this big book. And oh my God, how many calls I had to do with my sponsor about the fear that I was going to eat again. Because that's all I knew in OA was relapse. Why is it going to work this time? What's going to be different? But, you know, that's the miracle of this. Thank God again for every beautiful bite, because that's where it all began, the research I had to do, so I finally conceded to my innermost self that I was a real compulsive overeater, and this is really scary. And then I just got into action. And, yeah, the fear doesn't just instantly go away, but I never stopped doing. I've always kept moving in this right direction. God, give me the strength and courage to show up and suit up and do it again. And you know what? I started feeling neutral with food. Never has that been my MO. It's always about if I'm not eating, I'm thinking about it. I mean, I was ruled and dominated by food. And I start feeling neutral and I really could care less about it. That's where my faith started building. And I could see something was happening. And it's nothing about me. I'm an addict that self-destructs always. I get afraid. I am so maladjusted to life. Life presents me with new information. I always went sideways. I could never go through this thing called life on life's terms. And today, we've been reborn. That's what the third step is all about, because I am with God today. And I not only believe in God, I know God. I just have to stay calm enough, and I have to stay quiet, and I have to be observant to this higher power that works in miraculous ways, always. And I will never forget 6 months after putting the fork down, what a better time to pick up, because life presented me the most difficult challenge with my child, the most painful thing I've had to do, call 911 on my boy. And God gave me the strength because I just got quiet and I pressed in and I remembered that God is everything. And never once through all that did I think about eating. Thank you, God.
Thank you, Ginger C. Melanie C., followed by Roz G.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning again. Hello, everyone. My name is Melanie C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater calling in from Oregon. And I like the words notice, that the word fear, because that tells me that I have to notice it. I am not surprised that we have an individual special kind of inventory to do around fear, and it's right on the heels of resentment, and I can see then I needed to notice. I had to see it. I had a tremendous amount of resentment and rage, and rage became very, very, very powerful for me, and I saw that in the resentment inventories that I was doing, and yet I didn't understand. Couldn't connect entirely to the idea that people had suggested. I sort of did, that what was underneath that rage was fear. That was just not going to be anything that I could completely get my head around, since fear had become so powerful. I liked the idea of it. It was very seductive for me, and fear was the opposite of that. It was not something I could go with or land with. I learned through doing that particular inventory that it really was the foundation of everything that was going on for me. I learned to get in touch and in tune with my body, that when the rage started to come, would stop a moment then from this particular experience, that, that there really was fear behind it, and I could go towards that, that helped me press into my higher power with that particular weakness because it was so dangerous for me to go to the other side. I learned that I had a physical response to it. There was some shaking and some crippling paralysis that went along with it that was unacceptable to me, so that I would take it and press it into God before I'd let it go into rage and anger. Because when I did that, when I let it go into rage and anger, or the process, I might not use the correct terms that I mean here, all bets were off. There was something interesting and somewhat tender about this fear thing when it was pressed into God in its vulnerable form, that told me things were going to be okay, that told me that I was average and normal like everyone else, and that it were there was something to see about its origin. You know, where did it come from? How was I utilizing it? Where was it not even truthful or factual or anything, that I had created something out of it? And behind that was not growing up. I missed some tremendous milestones when I started using my drug of choice in those single digits that brought about all these other things, that I missed some tremendous milestones. And because of the steps, I get to go back to that age and that place, confront what was delusional fear, stories that I didn't even, that I had maybe conjured up and illuminated as a result of that fear that weren't true. And a stability to me each time I press into God with that sort of thing. I had to find out what fear was. I had to understand and learn what fear was, and this inventory form brought that to me and gave that to me. Very, very powerful. Fear is a very powerful, tender thing, I think. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Melanie C. Roz G., followed by Eileen M.
Good morning. My name is Roz G., and thank you, God, I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles County. And I'm going to try, I'm going to keep this share more in the present than in the past. But the past is that the biggest fear, I have a lot of them, and I don't have time in 3 minutes to go through, but the biggest fear that I have and had was my ability to be in a marriage. And so the reason I got married in the 80s, early 80s, was because I was afraid that nobody else would love me, that no one would fall in love with me, propose to me, cherish me, and be a mate. So the reason I got married was because the person I was with said, well, nobody will love you the way I can love you, and if we can't get married, then I will leave you. And, you know, I succumbed to that, and I got married to that person because I was afraid that nobody would love me the way he loved me. And it came to be true. Nobody loved me the way he did, with the way that I was treated by him, which was really awful. But after I did inventories, I had a part in that as well. But yesterday I heard somebody, my dogs are panting in the back, sorry about that. Yesterday as I was listening, there's somebody on here that said that we're stealing from ourselves. I could never understand why Bill wrote, we ought to class this with stealing. I didn't get it. But you know what? He said it such clarity yesterday. We're stealing from our future. When we're afraid to do something or not to do something out of fear, we're stealing from ourselves. And there's so many things that I'm afraid to do because I'm trusting in myself. Why have I stayed single for 15 years? Because I am afraid that I will get hurt again, or I'm afraid that I won't be a loving partner. That it's so true. I'm not depending on God to mold me into a lovable partner. But thank God for this meeting and for that we go deep into the chapters and all of the shares. And, you know, it's vulnerability for me to say that, but it's really true. And so my goal is to depend on God to mold me and shape me into who he would want me to be. Thank you for listening, and I pass.
Thank you, Roz G. Eileen M., followed by Patty T.
Good morning. This is Eileen M., recovered in New Hampshire.
Eileen, could you speak up a little bit?
Sure. This is Eileen M., recovered in New Hampshire. Can you hear me?
All right. It's faint, but we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. So let's see. What jumps out at me in this discussion is fear is the evil and corroding thread. I never really understood what it meant when it said it set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune. I never
Eileen,
understood that. Yeah.
Are you on a speakerphone?
No, I'm in my car.
Oh, okay. All right. All right, continue.
Okay. I didn't understand what that meant. It set in motion trains of circumstances, but I understand it today because what I'm thinking is that, fear always has driven my other character defects. Like, I heard on the earlier meeting, someone was saying that, what were the coping mechanisms I used to cope with fear? And I was thinking about that, and, I used procrastination. It's like any kind of avoidance of reality because I thought that was going to solve my problem. If I was afraid of something, then if I just avoided it, that it wouldn't happen. And another one was perfectionism and people-pleasing. Now, there's a good one. But fear drove my other character defects. And, one thing I did is I still do this, is I make up stories about things and people that's not even reality. Today I really believe my higher power wants me to live a day at a time and to face these things that I'm afraid of, and I don't have to do it alone. I have my higher power. I have, the fellowship, and I don't have to borrow trouble from the future today. Because like when I'm fearful, I know I'm burning up energy foolishly. Like it says in the big book, it's a really selfish thing. Anyway, I wanted to share that, and I hope you could hear me okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Eileen. Yeah, we could hear you. Thank you very much. Patty T, followed by Marilyn D.
Hi, this is Patty T. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Patty. Thank you.
Thank you, Mo, for your service. And, oh, my God, I've been crying through all the shares this morning, so I hope I can say this and not be too emotional. Whew. I agree with the last speaker. Fear has completely run my life. And one of the ways that it does that is also procrastination. If I don't know how to do something, I just don't do it. Or if I'm afraid of failing, I put it off and put it off because you know what? I don't want anybody to know that I don't know something. So yesterday, I called a newcomer, and we were having a conversation. I think I let her talk about 30 seconds because I monopolized the conversation. And she was at work. I didn't even ask, Like, I'm so involved with myself. And then we got off the phone, and I punched around. I was driving, so I punched around in my contacts to try to find somebody else to call. And then it became apparent that my higher power didn't want me to call anyone else right now. What he wanted was for me to look at what had just happened. This is a common occurrence in my life. I have monologues, not conversations. As long as I can talk and keep myself removed from you, I feel safe. But it's a false safety because what it is another form of isolation. And it's predicated by fear of intimacy. If I listen, I might get to know you. I might become open to let you know me. And that is the scariest thing on earth to me. But I realized that God needed me to connect with him, and I did for the rest of my drive to work. I talked to God. I just said, please help me change this. I don't know what to do. And I made sure that I was of service as much as I could be the rest of the day and without talking. And I don't know. I'm just so grateful that this meeting is here and that you all are here. And I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Patty T. Marilyn D., followed by Deanne B.
Did you ask for Marilyn T.?
Oh, T is the last initial?
Yes.
Oh, okay, sorry. Then it's Marilyn
okay.
T.
Mo, it's all fine. You're doing a fabulous job. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So the part that I really like in what we are reading today is on page 68. It's the first paragraph. And it's right where it asks ourselves, we ask ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. And some of us had great self-confidence, but it didn't really fully solve our fear problems in any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. You know, I do understand where self-reliance comes from. I've just finished my fourth step at the end of May and gone into my sixth, seventh, now writing down the eighth. But just realizing how not relying on a higher power and relying on myself, and I'm sure I learned it from the knees of my parents, that you don't have anyone to rely on, you rely on yourself. But how harmful that has been in my life has been brought abundantly clear in doing the fourth step this time. When you don't reach out, when you don't depend on a higher power, when you don't trust other people, when you don't ask for help, it's a very isolating life. I could cover it up with anger and rage and think that I was doing it okay. But underneath was always that prevailing morass of fear. Fear of someone knowing the real you. And I really liked the person who shared about the marriage. That was quite illuminating. Just fear that you didn't measure up, you weren't enough. Lot of thought-provoking things today, and I'm very thankful to be on this program with you guys all and a vision for you. And with that, I'm going to pass. Just lots to think about.
Well, yeah. Thank you, Marilyn T. and Deanne B. Deanne, press star 1 to unmute.
Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can, Deanne.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry. Well, Deanne B. from New Jersey, I'm very grateful to be in this meeting this morning, very grateful that you're all here. And I haven't read the big book yet. I'm just getting started. But from what I'm hearing, the thing that comes out the most is self-reliance and the fact that it's getting me nowhere and the fact that I just can't stop on my own and I need help. It's really hard for me to reach out and ask for help. Then when I do reach out and ask for help, as soon as I hear something I don't like, I go back and I take it back and try to do it my way again, because I'm afraid if I follow someone else's instructions, I'm not going to be in control of my life. But there again, I'm in control of my life and this is where I'm at. So without having too much to say, because I haven't read and I don't know what to say and what not, I'm going to pass and just ask for information for newcomers. Thank you.
Well, thank you, DNB. Yes, stay on the line after the meeting ends and we'll get your name and phone number and you'll get some outreach calls. All right,
thank
just
you.
To remind everybody where we're at, we're on page 67. Starting with the third paragraph, notice that the word fear, reading through two paragraphs, ending with, when it made us cocky, it was worse. And I have time for maybe four more readers.
Eileen R.
Sima M.
Kathleen
H.
Sima M. Wendy
M. The first one, was it Eileen R.?
Eileen S.
Gina R.
S. Gina R. Okay. And
Wendy
one more.
M.
Wendy
M.
Okay. That's it. So I have Eileen S., Sima M., Gina R., and Wendy M. Okay, Eileen, you're on. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Mo. Good morning, everybody. This is Eileen S. in Portland, Oregon. I'm so grateful to be here listening to all of you. I had to take a quick call, so unfortunately I missed some of the things that were said, but I'm hearing what I'm supposed to hear, and oh my God, these two paragraphs are huge. I mean, I just feel like I could read them all out loud just to hear myself say them and hear you all hear them. The self-reliance thing really, really gets me. Oh my goodness. I just thought I'm supposed to be self-reliant, that I get a gold star if I'm self-reliant. And it never got me anywhere, but I pretended, because I really wasn't self-reliant. And deep down inside, I had a sense this wasn't working, but I didn't know any other way. I just didn't know any other way. And the self-confidence thing, I really didn't have self-confidence. Maybe I did about a few things, but it didn't solve anything. And the cocky thing really got me. I wrote in my big book here, me, when it made us cocky, it was worse. And it was kind of like that parable about little kid, you know, whistling in the dark. You know, the cocky was just a facade. And the idea of fear being classed with stealing, I heard somebody the other day say on this meeting, you know, it stole my life. Fear stole my life. So many things I haven't done because I've been afraid. And I took a class over the weekend. It was all weekend. And it was something in the realm of what I've wanted to do for a very long time. And I finally gave that to myself, and I had to pray, but I meditated in the car before I went, and at the first day what I was doing was really hard, and it didn't go as perfectly as I wanted it to, and I had to do a 10-step. The fear was up so huge, fear of looking like an idiot, fear of not feeling like a part of, was that time?
No, not yet.
Oh, okay. There was so much fear up for me. So the first day was hard because I had a lot of fear. And I had to call someone and share about the fear and do kind of a 10th step about it and then turn my attention to somebody I could help. The second day went better. I wanted to have fun. I was paying good money for this class. And my fear of looking stupid was so huge that it got in the way of my enjoying the class. So after doing the 10th step and calling someone, the second day went way better. And it wasn't perfect, and it was a hard class, but I used to always let that fear be a reason not to do something I really wanted to do. And the way that it came up in my life and making the decision, I was helped by somebody in program, felt very divinely inspired. So I knew I was supposed to do it. And the experience was great, but having done it is huge for me, and I'm still feeling it. And I made a bunch of stuff. It was a art type class, and I made some things that I'm very grateful for that are just reminders that I was willing to do that. So anyway, I'm very grateful to be here. Thanks so much for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Eileen S. Sima M., followed by Gina R.
Good morning. This is Sima M.
Good morning.
Can I be heard?
Yes, you can.
Okay. I'm grateful, compulsive overeater, living in recovery. I don't usually tune in live, but I am so happy I did today because this topic is fear, and I realize that I've been living in fear for the past few days because I have to talk to a sponsee, an in-person sponsee, and I've been putting it off because I've been fearful that she won't like me or she will yell at me or she won't approve of me. And I realize now that that's been stealing. I've been stealing the honesty away from her and away from myself. So listening to this meeting today is giving me a lot of calm and serenity and bringing me back into my higher power's will, and just letting go and doing what I have to do, and whatever the results are, I'll deal with that. So I just want to thank everyone for sharing, and thank you for chairing the meeting, Mo, and I will wish everyone a good day.
Thank you, Sima M. Gina R., followed by Wendy M.
Hi, Mo. Thank you so much. This is Gina R., gratefully recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body and a compulsive eater living in Green Valley, Arizona. My take on this whole subject of fear, it feels a little bit different. I'm one of the people who, what I lived through as a young child, something, you know, things that kids should not have to live through, I ended up having a different relationship with fear. I grew up thinking that I'm not afraid of anything. It doesn't matter what you do to me. I'm not afraid. But it really was a lie. It was denial. Don't even know I am lying. But until I actually began my spiritual journey, and it's taken many, many, many years to get to this point, and especially the last two, my denial of fear was just a coping mechanism. I would do things that I couldn't understand why people didn't want to try things. It was fun, but what I know now is by having that wall up and not recognizing that fear is actually an instinct. It's an instinct that my Creator has given me, and that I needed to respect it, and I needed to understand nuances around it. That's what I know now. So because I recognize that I do have fear, and that it's important for me to heed it, once I'm able to do that and then connect with my higher power, I'm able to get to some of the more subtle aspects of it. And am I really afraid, or am I actually happy? And for example, I can have an expectant heart and be anticipating something that might for some people feel afraid. That might make them feel afraid. And that's a difference for me now. And I'm able to put words to the subtleties of these feelings. And the other thing that I really try to avoid is saying, I am afraid. I am not afraid. I'm having a feeling of fear, or I'm having a feeling of anxiousness. I am not those feelings. Those feelings roll in. They sit around for a while as long as they need to, and if I'm awake, aware, and alert and let them be my teacher, then I can let them move on. But if I embody them, then I get stuck, and I'm still in the prison of the disease. So glad to be here with everybody, and wishing everybody a great day. I pass.
Thank you, Gina R. Wendy M., you'll be our final share.
Yes, good morning. Wendy M., recovered in Boulder, Colorado. Thank you, everyone, for your service, and it's awesome because I'm sitting in so much fear as I'm talking to you this morning, and it is just a feeling. It's actually not a fact, and I want to say that, you know, when I wake up in the morning, the first thing I get on my knees, then I write, and I write down what am I afraid of, because I'm usually swimming in fear in the morning, and I don't even know because I think it's my reality. But then I set it on paper, and what happens is it stops being my reality. I get to just list what are the fears that I've got this morning. Because the thing about fear for me, the reason I know it's part of my disease, is that it's in my mind. It's not in other words, I tell stories. And I go over the stories over and over and over again, which just gets my mind reeling with fear. And then it feels real, right? And what I also know is that I'm in my disease when that's happening, because the disease centers in my mind and fear centers in my mind. and I can just really do a number on myself. You know, just, but the minute I list the fears and I face them, as I heard this morning earlier, we get freedom, right? When I face the fear, I get the freedom, because I just go, oh, it's just this thing. It isn't real, right? It's just in my mind. And then not only do I get to face them, but then I have this wonderful thing. I write down, so what am I trying to control this morning to you know, to deal with the fear? Like if I have fear, it's like, I better do something about it. I better control it. I better control the situation. What can I do? You know, and when we say this is a plan of action, this is a program of action, that's not the action that we're talking about, you know. The other thing I want to say about fear is when I take action in this program, it alleviates the fear immediately. The fear can't do anything but just disappear because I'm taking action. I'm calling one of you. I'm writing. I'm praying to God. I'm working with another sponsee in the morning. You know, whatever it is, whatever action I take, that alleviates the fear for me. You know, and I want a guarantee right now, right? I took a very large step in my marriage. And boy, did I wake up this morning wanting a guarantee. You know, what's a list of things I can do? How can I control and run the show? You know, God, you must give me exactly what I want. Turns out God gives me what I need, not what I want. You know, but this is one huge trust God moment for me. It's huge. It's not I believe in God. It's I trust God. Like seriously turn it over and give it to God, you know. But the minute I write it on paper, God, I want a guarantee. God, what am I trying to control right now because I'm in fear? What am I trying to do to run the show? It alleviates all of it. The power of the fear just dissipates.
Time.
Because I've written it and it's a thing and it can be dealt with. And thanks for letting me share it.
Well, thank you, Wendy M., and thank you, everyone, for all those shares on fear. Oh, it's fabulous. I want to thank all those who gave service at this meeting, and we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And I will now ask Stephanie L. to read A Vision for You.
Good morning, everyone. It's Stephanie L., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Southern California. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.